Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Albany Times Union editorial page editor Jay Jochnowitz. Welcome, Jay Jochnowitz. Always been an admirer of your fine work.
Oh, thanks, Alan. Appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
So your job is, to describe it, is you help guide the editorial board. You have an editorial board. Everybody gets a vote. But you help guide them in terms of what's going to be on the editorial page in the Albany Times Union, which probably writes more about state government than any other newspaper in New York State.
That is what we call our master narrative. Yeah, we tend to do a lot on state government, especially during session.
Master narrative. I don't think I've heard that before. What does it mean?
Well, it just means the thing that we probably pride ourselves most in knowing the best. You know, our communities are important to us as well, but I think that what stands out, where the Times Union becomes more than a local paper, is through its state coverage.
Now, you're an old hand at state coverage, aren't you?
I was state editor from 2000 to 2008, and I reported on City Hall before that in Albany, so it was spread across the street. So we had a lot of state issues.
So basically, if you want to talk about narrative, what's yours about state politics? I mean, you've been at it a long time. I must say that we were sitting there watching the State of the State together and listening to it. Mine is somewhat cynical. I'm wondering about yours.
I don't know what's happening to me as I get older. I'm getting a little more generous in my view of things. And, you know, I still think there's plenty of political opportunism and cravenness out there. But I also, I'll agree, you know, we're going to talk about the state of the state. Yeah, I'll agree with the governor that there has been somewhat a change of atmosphere over there. I mean, this was a really dysfunctional government, and embarrassingly, you know, as a New Yorker, we kind of like our bad government, but, you know, it was our government. But
it's like in the Mets.
Yeah, exactly. But I think we were all getting a little tired of it and starting to wonder, can we change this the same way? I think there was a sense back, you know, in the 70s and 80s, is New York City ever going to be a governable city? Things can turn around, and I think we've started to see it.
So there's an old saying for politicians, tell them what you're going to do, do it, tell them that you did it. Is, in fact, that what the state of the state was this year with Andrew Cuomo?
Yeah. First, he outlined all the things that they'd accomplished in the last 3 years, and it's a pretty good list.
Were you impressed?
You know, when he listed it, and it's certainly not his responsibility, I guess, to say all the problems with each and every item or get into the nuances of it, but, you know, you just take a look at, you know, a few of the things on the list, you know, teacher performance evaluations. You know, from there, you also have the whole controversy about overtesting, about Common Core, about all the things that are going on. Casino gaming, some people are still skeptical about it, as we see in Saratoga Springs. I mean, you can go right down the line. SAFE Act is, you know, I appreciate his sense of accomplishment with that, and I appreciate the fact that the state put some solid gun control in, but at the same time, you know, for every accomplishment
Well, no, you're right. I mean, for example, if you start talking about his anti-corruption efforts, there's no question that he says he tried, but to me, you sort of judge somebody on implementation as opposed to having the issue.
Mm-hmm. And I think the people who are looking closest, you know, who are closest to the situation, who watch it every day, are not as impressed with Jay Cope as the governor is.
Jay Cope being the
Joint Commission on Public Integrity.
Right. That was one of his first efforts, and it hasn't really distinguished itself the way we see it.
It had a bad sense of secrecy about it. I think that was a big problem with it. And there was also a feeling that, what was the improvement? Where did it improve? The old Commission on Public Integrity was, when Dave Grandow was running it, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Because he was doing his job.
Yeah. So, you know, what the improvement has been, I haven't seen it with that.
The New York State Board of Elections has come in for a lot of criticism lately, and I think deservedly so. You know, there are two Republicans, two Democrats. It has been, if you want to use the word dysfunctional one more time, dysfunctional. There's been a lot of people who have asked that we improve it, throw the bums out, change the composition. What did you hear from the governor today?
I heard that, what was that, the second to last thing he mentioned? So, you know, this was hitting the laundry list time. What'd he say for last? is always important, you know, because that's what, you know, what
it's
you leave
the crescendo.
With. Yeah. But what you say just before the end, you know, he was really just going down the list at that point. And I think, you know, he did talk about the ethics. I mean, that was the end of his speech. But I go back a year to the momentum that was building on this. And a few solid proposals came out of the gate. The IDC came out with a good proposal. The Senate Democrats came out with a good proposal. And then the governor and Shelley kind of threw in these, I can't quite use all the words I want to use here, but they were not full plans. They were not solid plans. And I got the feeling that this was almost more than just some politicians looking to glom onto the issue and have their own signature item out there. I really felt it was counterproductive to throw out that many ideas.
Well, talk to us a little bit about Sheldon Silver. I'm fascinated by the whole state of the state milieu, if you want my word for it. Because in the old days, everybody used to go to the assembly chamber, the larger chamber. They used to sit there, and then came the governor giving a talk at their home. But now he's chosen to do it at the cavernous convention center. It's his speech. It's his crowd. He sets the agenda. And to me, some of it is just silliness. The beginning in which he introduces virtually everybody and tells a few jokes and the rest of it. You know, you could get 20 minutes or half an hour off of that speech if he just came in, maybe as a George Washington might have or a current president, and gave the speech. What's that all about?
A word that's been going through my head a lot lately whenever this comes up is stagecraft. You know, the governor is, but there's also a positioning going on there that you've got the governor holding his own show as opposed to reporting, which, you know, kind of feels almost like maybe to him like a subservient thing to the legislature. This is not Shelley Silver's house he has to go into. It's not Dean Skelos's house that he has to go into. It's you can come to my party and you can sit on my stage. I will acknowledge your presence. And from there, it's my show. And if you look at the state of the state, the same way you look at a state of the union, which is required by the federal constitution, that there was an obligation there that the president would make a report to Congress. Co-equal branches of government, but also acknowledging the executive is reporting to the legislative and really, in a sense, reporting to the representatives of the people, not directly to the people, but to the representatives of the people. And, you know, I think the governor has blurred that distinction, and I think he's done it intentionally, that he has certainly gained more control over the legislature than his predecessors have.
Well, I think that analysis is, frankly, very good. Jay Jochnowitz, I guess there's some tensions here that I found interesting. You know, in the State of the Union address, as long as we're on this sort of comparison, if there was a third party that was handling this and handling it fairly, if he mentioned something like pre-K, which he did, pre-K for everybody, says the governor, which I knew he was going to do because he's under tremendous pressure from the new mayor, Bill de Blasio of New York City, who is now certainly the leading progressive figure in New York State. And we said, well, we're going to have pre-K for everybody. In the State of the Union address, the cameras would go right to Bill de Blasio. They do nothing like that here. It's all, as you say, stagecraft. You know, he's got a slide up there about a kid sitting behind a computer, which certainly doesn't make it as interesting and as impartial a series as you might have if he were talking.
I do wonder how much of that was the fault of the cameras we were watching as opposed to the management of the cameras by whoever, you know, was the contact from the state. I think before I would judge that, I'd want to know who was making that decision. But I do remember in the old days, you know, sitting up in the gallery of the assembly and, you know, you were kind of crowded between all the cameras, a lot of cameras, you know, they did what they did. I think they had the script well in advance. They knew what the governor was going to say. They knew who was going to be pointed out. And it was bang, bang, bang. They would just switch cameras. You'd be right on the person representative of the subject that was in the speech.
Jay Jochnowitz, you know, as you say, you're a hand at this. You've been around for a while. But there are some tensions. So I want to ask you about them. We just mentioned the first one I want to talk about, which is the new mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, and Andrew Cuomo. They both worked together. They were colleagues at the HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, where Cuomo was the cabinet member. And we're told that they're friends, and they were friends, although I've talked to an awful lot of people who worked at HUD who say, you know, this is a top-down management style from Cuomo, and not everybody was in love with him there. So talk a little bit, if you can, about the tension between the two men.
Well, de Blasio has become a national symbol, particularly on conservative radio, of a liberalism that exceeds anything that conservatives want to see.
Sure.
When he talks about taxing the rich and very explicitly talks about, you know, a tale of two cities and so forth, he's become a target. And you know, whatever friendship exists between the governor and the mayor, I'm sure goes out the window on this one. He does not want to be associated. He not only, I think, doesn't want to be associated with de Blasio, but I think he saw de Blasio's proposal to fund universal pre-K through a tax on the rich as, you know, this is going to stick to me if I don't do something about it. And he had to do something about it, especially if he has national ambitions.
And his big thing, isn't it, a Clinton-esque, I'm going to lower the taxes.
Right. So we're going to spend more money, but we're going to lower taxes. And that is an interesting proposal. And we saw an example of how he's going to do that, which astounded me with the with his proposal to do technology, to do a bond act for technology. I mean, you do bond acts for transportation. You do bond acts for infrastructure.
Yeah, well, you do a bond act basically every time we take a mortgage on our house, right. We can't pay for it the first day. But these are things that traditionally come out of our education budget, don't they?
Exactly. $2 billion is certainly not pocket change for the state.
No.
But $2 billion done over several years is an affordable, depending on your perspective, but an affordable increase in education. These are things that are only going to last for a few years. The software is going to be obsolete probably by the time they install it.
Sure.
The technology itself, I mean, you know, I can see, you know, down the road that the schools that he painted without the basketball net are going to be the schools with the broken computers in a few years. This is, to my thinking, this is not bond act material.
Interesting. So why did he do it?
I think he did it because it looked good to say we're going to put all this technology in the schools. But I think that he's able to spend by borrowing. And at the same time, tax cuts, which don't sound like spending, he can do that by taking a $2 billion surplus and throwing it back to the taxpayers instead of taking that $2 billion and saying, why don't we buy the technology for the schools? I could see a well-crafted speech saying this is an investment for the future. We're taking our savings and we're going to put it into a solid investment in our children for the future.
So, Jay Jarnowitz, how much of this is what we I get criticized for this every once in a while. I'll be honest with you. For you're too political, Shartok. You're always thinking that Andrew Cuomo or others have motives, political motives for what they're doing. I say, yeah, that's right. Why don't you just talk policy as opposed to the political motives of the actors?
I think this goes back to my generosity issue, that I'm only generous to a point when I look at what these folks do. I think everything is done with two calculuses. Calculi? Everything is done with, hopefully, at least with both. You know, that he looks at, I do want to do something for children. I do want to put more technology in the schools. It's ridiculous that we have schools that don't have internet access or modern day computers or and so forth. But also, you know, there's a political calculus there. How does this look if I spend money? How is this going to look to the people that want to see me not spend money? So, you know, you throw in a tax cut, which looks like you're not spending money, but you're actually giving it back, when in fact it's really not, in all cases, a tax cut. It's just a freeze, and the state's actually going to be spending the money to achieve this. The state's going to be underwriting this tax cut on a local level. That is spending money, just as much as buying computers would have been, or, you know, fixing a road. And I think, yes, so there's a political calculus to both. It's interesting to see how he crafts it. It's just put together in a way that puts the best light on it.
Now, Andrew Cuomo has a counselor, Drew Zambelli, who also happens to be one of the best pollsters around. I'm sure when he goes around and he puts the proposition before the voters, Long Island or in Westchester County, and says, what's your number one, you know, beef with government? He's going to hear, we can't afford to pay $20,000 a year in taxes on a little house.
Absolutely.
And so that is something he's going to stick with, and it puts him at odds with de Blasio, who wants to tax the rich.
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the, you know, the again, it's all how you craft this. So the governor says in his speech, I can't remember the exact words, but he said the biggest burden in New York is not the state income tax, it's the state property tax. Well, who's really responsible for that? Let's, you know, break that down. The state doesn't fully pay for education. It makes local school districts, local taxpayers pay half the cost, roughly. The state doesn't pay the entire cost for Medicaid. So the state has thrown these burdens off to local governments, and now it blames them for spending too much money. Now, to some degree, I don't disagree with the governor that we probably have too much government in New York. But, you know, as we've seen is with Northville and Mayfield, the merger of that district, the governor pointed it out himself. He made it easier for all this consolidation to occur among municipalities and school districts. How many have happened, too, in all this time? Well, there's reasons for that. There are reasons. People don't want their kids, especially upstate, let's say, spending an hour and a half on a bus. that's what a consolidated school district is going to bring you for some kids. So, you know, when he blames property taxes and local government, I think that there's a much bigger story there to tell about how much the state itself doesn't do.
Interesting, Jay, when he introduced Mayor Stephanie Miner of Syracuse, who got up and got a huge hand from everybody in the hall. She's a mayor on that very firing line that you're talking about, who got in the governor's face at one point because he said, okay, if you don't have enough money, we'll allow you to borrow it on favorable terms. She said, not us. I don't want to borrow money. And she really became a hero in New York State.
Yep. And I think that was his, I'm sure the governor knows as well as anybody that you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. I wouldn't say that Stephanie Miner is an enemy necessarily, but, you know, he certainly had some fences to mend there and to look as if he was mending the fences. You know, we saw this a few years ago. This is way off topic probably, but, you know, he had a big blow up with over a political reporter, Liz Benjamin. And when he did his response, his rebuttal to the Legislative Correspondents Association show, he did the rebuttal with Liz Benjamin, invited her to the executive mansion, did a video with her of the two of them being all cozy and making up.
A little too cozy.
Yeah, it was a very unusual video. But it was, I mean, this
making up or making out was the implication.
Yeah, well, there was an implication that, they were behind closed doors in the middle of the afternoon. What's going on? But, you know, that was part of the joke. It was a very amusing video. But I think it was telling. This is his style. I've seen other governors, make enemies of people, and they don't. They just keep them as enemies. Cuomo, by highlighting Stephanie Miner today, I think diffused a bit of the tension that was there.
Okay, so we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left. It seemed to me that the state of the state was interminable, and I'm wondering, and I saw you furiously scribbling because you're going to have to write the editorial on this or help write the editorial on this. What stands out as the major blockbuster of the program?
Well, I think a 0% corporate tax upstate is an interesting idea. You know, he's taking the
New York is open for business.
The New York is open for business idea, the tax credits around the SUNY campuses, tax credits, the zero tax around the campuses, and putting it all across the whole upstate. And, you know, on the one hand, I credit him for the boldness of that, to say that, this is a longstanding situation. We've been tearing our hair out over it. We've been bummed out about it for years, and politicians have been promising to do something about it, and nothing's gotten done. This is pretty dramatic. So in that sense, I appreciate his boldness. On the other hand, you kind of wonder, how much are we going to become as I made a note to myself, a state of the pays and the pays not.
Yeah,
Is anyone that offers a benefit to New York, the condition's going to be, well, except for one thing, I want to contribute nothing to government.
Well, there comes a point, and you and I sat in together on a Vox Pop program in which people were calling up, and one lady called up, and she said, if somebody doesn't pay, somebody else has to. Is that right?
And that's true. That's true. Now, the governor and his people may make the argument, well, if we bring in somebody that's never been here before and they don't pay, what have we lost? Well, school districts have been making this argument for years that when a family moves in, they cost the district more than the district gets in taxes, if they send their children to school, as opposed to, let's say, a business coming in, businesses don't burden the schools. They just pay money and the schools use it. But there's a difference. Schools educate children. Municipalities have to fix the streets. They have to provide
waste removal, sewage,
water, all these things. And if you suddenly say, the people that work for these businesses, as he's done with the SUNY program, don't have to pay any taxes at all for a period of time. Who's done the cost? Where's the cost benefit analysis on this? How much are we really getting, the cosmetic effect of maybe some more jobs? And in the long run, it's going to cost more into property taxes just for the care and feeding of all this.
I want to spend a few minutes on Shelley Silver. I started before by asking you about tension between people. Shelley Silver, who is the longstanding speaker, I believe is now right at the point at which he's going to be the longest serving speaker in New York State, or very close to it after Oswald Heck. And, he's under a lot of pressure, but he's still standing. His people like him very much. And he's under a lot of pressure because his chief of staff is Mrs. Rapfogel. She's married to a guy who's, well, an admitted crook now, and who has skimmed money and the rest of it. And they keep arresting people around him. And I think, you know, the hint has always been, let's see if we can connect the dots to Sheldon Silver. I suspect that isn't going to happen, but it could. Does that influence a political actor's range of actions?
In terms of what the governor
wants.
Well, I think, first of all, we didn't hear any of that today because I think he knows the state of the state is not the place to pick a fight with somebody.
No.
Or to appear disingenuous. In fact, he invited them, as we said, into his house. You don't yeah. mistreat somebody. Does he see a political calculus in this? Somebody watching, listening to the talk radio, reading the columns that folks write and kind of watching the news dynamic, you know, you kind of know, as somebody that has covered state government, you know that these stories don't just come out of the blue. So, you know, quite often there's a prod from someone in the administration, from someone in the legislature.
Sure.
So you do see water being carried here and there. And I think that behind the scenes, there's a lot of pushing of the, ultimately Shelley is responsible for this notion. And I don't think that's necessarily an unfair thing. He is the Speaker of the Assembly. He is, something that people don't always understand is that legislators are not just independent actors elected in independent politicians elected in their own right, but they become employees of the state when they work for them. And Shelley is, in a sense, first among equals. He's the CEO of the Senate, of the Assembly, in a sense. He is responsible for the atmosphere there. Is he fixing it? I think is what ultimately.
But it doesn't seem like there's a, in the beginning we heard more about the rift between the two men, Cuomo and Silver. We don't hear as much. Now, there are those people, I'm one of them, who believe that the governor is largely responsible for the Republicans still being in control of the New York State Senate. Mm-hmm. And, I'm very interested in whether or not, there will be a change in the way this is going, because there are those four Democrats who have gone over to make peace with the Republicans and to keep them in control. I always believe that the governor could bring them in the room and shake a stick at them and say, cut it out. And he, if he's going to run for national office, is going to have to face a Democratic National Convention, say, hey, how come you kept those people in charge, the Republicans in your state? Do you see this coalition with a few Democrats collapsing, or do you see it going forward?
No, I see it going forward. I think there was a signal a few weeks ago where Jeff Klein, the head of the IDC, had alluded to the fact that this was a one-year agreement. He would, happens the next year. It was perhaps a signal that this was going to fall apart. I don't see any sign it's going to fall apart. For whatever reasons, good or bad, that they forge this coalition, I think they feel they get more out of it than they...
Well, sure. They sold out for a certain amount of pieces of silver, is the accusation, on the other side.
And I don't think the Democrats will have them back at this point.
No,
I think everybody knows that. Yeah.
Well, anyway, Jay Jochnowitz, it's a great pleasure. You're a thoughtful man, and you really have thought about these things. Our guest has been Jay Jochnowitz, editorial page editor for the Albany Times Union. Jay, thanks so much for joining us and for all you do for our community. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having me.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.